This is an ABC podcast.
Ta aloha ni, I ora na, and good fella morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. We'd like to acknowledge that Pacific Beat comes to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. Whakawelahi, thank you for joining us this morning. Well, today's the day. What will the fate of Fiji's former Prime Minister, Bainimarama, be as he heads to court for a possible sentencing? Pacific leaders are renewing the call for United Nations to investigate human rights abuses in West Papua. And will Tonga's King and Prime Minister ever see eye to eye? We'll have more on those stories shortly. Once our show is done, remember our stories will go up online. Simply type Pacific Beat Radio Australia into your search engine for you to replay or share these stories across your social media platforms. We encourage you to visit our ABC Pacific page on Facebook or Instagram, and we welcome your feedback. Let's get on with the show. I'm Aggie Tobol, and this is Pacific Beat. Today is a big day in Fiji. Later this morning in the Suva Magistrates Court, former Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama, the man who ruled the country for 16 years, will find out whether he'll be sentenced to jail for perverting the course of justice. The High Court convicted Bainimarama a fortnight ago, along with the former Police Commissioner, Sitiveni Kiriho, on a charge of abuse of office for interfering in a police investigation in 2019. Whether he's jailed or not, it promises to be a significant moment in Fijian history. It's been just over a year after losing the prime ministership. So what does Bainimarama's conviction say about the state of the country's politics? Reporter Liam Fox spoke to longtime watcher of Fijian politics, Professor John Frankel from Victoria University of Wellington, to get his views.
We've had 17 years of first authoritarian rule under Frank Bainimarama and then semi-authoritarian rule after he became the elected prime minister in 2014. And now we're seeing the new government that's coming in are pulling out all the stops to convict both Bainimarama and the former police chief, Sitiveni Kiriho, of various offences. This is the first of several.
You mentioned there the government, the new government, pulling out all the stops. Do you think this is a case of retribution or the result of legitimate investigation into the goings-on under the previous administration?
Well, I think it's difficult. You know, in the sort of broader run of things, the offences that they're getting Bainimarama on are relatively small. If guilty, behaved in an illegal way when he interfered in a police investigation at the University of the South Pacific, which is what he's being sentenced for today. There's also a case against him for breaching a statutory requirements for tenders in health procurement. And the third thing that is being put before the courts has to do with treason, with the attempt to engineer a counter coup against the elected government. That's the big one, I would have thought.
Is there any parallel to this in Fijian political history? I'm thinking of Laceni and Garissa's jailing.
Well, yeah, after the 2006 coup, the incoming Bainimarama-led government pulled out all the stops to try and find evidence of corruption against the former government. They found really very little. I mean, there were certainly all sorts of irregularities and badly handled things under that Garissa government, but they didn't find evidence of major corruption. Eventually, they managed to get Garissa on a charge related to his activities as a chairman of the Development Bank back in the early 1990s. And these were transparently efforts to try and make it impossible for Garissa to contest the 2014 election, very clearly politically motivated. I think the current court cases against Bainimarama are really quite different.
We know that before losing the election, Frank Bainimarama had strong connections to the military, a former military man himself, of course. Do you think there's any risk if he is sentenced to a jail term of any kind of instability at all?
I think that boat has sailed. I mean, I think there was a major risk of instability in the aftermath of the December 2022 election. Indeed, the current military commander, Jonah Kaliniwai, gave an interview to a local radio station just last week where he indicated just how unstable things were and how uncertain that election outcome was. During those days after the election, there were attempts to destabilize one of the coalition parties, the SODELPA. Then there were a series of video broadcasts in January where Bainimarama pretty much called for an uprising by the military, and for failing that, for a mutiny within the military. There, at that point, there really was a major risk of instability if Bainimarama was able to provoke such a kind of reaction within the military. But I don't think there's been any risk of a reaction from the public at large in defense of that former government. On the contrary, I think people wanted to move on. I think there's a lot of people that find it a breath of fresh air that people are able to speak openly for the first time. Civil servants are giving interviews on the radio and on TV. There's certainly a sense that things turned the corner. I think two figures that were very influential in obtaining that transition were the current military commander, John Kalaniwai, and indeed the president, who both of whom refused to be pressurized to destabilize the new government.
And that's John Frankel, Professor of Comparative Politics at Victoria University of Wellington, there speaking to Liam Fox. Well, for more on this story, we cross to Suva, where our reporter, Lide Movono, is standing by. With that, I say, Bula, Lide.
Bula and Yaravanaka, Agnes.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Gosh, look, before we get into what's happening in court today, you are outside. Do you mind setting the scene for us right now?
Agnes, right now, what I've been told by police, I'm not directly outside the courthouse yet and on my way there, but already there is police presence, increased police presence in and around the government buildings precinct where the courthouse is located, along with, of course, the main government buildings and the Parliament House. However, that is about all that is indicative of how significant this day is. I've spoken to police and military sources overnight, and what they're all saying is it's low risk. They expect this to be just another day in court. The only extra police right now that we're seeing in the city is because there's going to be a lot of attention. So it's more for crowd control than anything else. However, Agnes, for us journalists, this is a pretty significant day.
Okay, well, once you get there, and I know you've been following this case very closely, can you take us through, though, how we even ended up at today's sentencing?
Sure. So what happened was, in October of last year, the magistrate that has been presiding over this case, Ms. Saini Pumau, did find Siti Veningili Ho and the former Fijian Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama not guilty of the two charges that they were facing. For Mr. Bainimarama, it's attempting to avert the cause of justice, sorry. And for the suspended police commissioner, it's abuse of office. The two are understood to have stopped an ongoing criminal investigations department investigations into the University of the South Pacific. So after she acquitted the two, state prosecutors did appeal in the High Court in December, and Acting Chief Justice Salisu Temo handed down his ruling just over a month ago now, in which he said that Saini Pumau made errors in the law, and that she made some conclusions, or that she came up with some conclusions in her judgment that weren't backed up by fact. Also, he says that Saini Pumau did not give the state councils the opportunity to respond to some conclusions that had been made by the end of the defense's case, which hadn't come up earlier during the state evidence time. So it was a long list of 8 points in which Acting Chief Justice Salisu Temo says Magistrate Saini Pumau made errors in law, and he directed her to enter a guilty conviction and also to sentence the two men today. So a week ago, we were back in court for what is called a mitigation hearing or sentencing hearing in some other districts, in some other jurisdictions. So what happened then is the defense counsels had the opportunity to basically ask for leniency. But Devanesh Sharma, the defense counsel in instead also directed Seni Puomau to know that she had full discretion over what kind of sentence to give the men today. It was quite a heated debate a week ago, Agnes. I'd never seen that happen in Fijian courts, where the state prosecutors had to interrupt a court session and basically caution both the magistrate and the defense counsel to not make any more debates around the facts of the evidence, but instead to stick to the conviction. However, we did see, say, Seni Puomau respond to that. And today we will know what she decides in terms of what kind of a sentence to give former Fijian Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama and suspended Police Commissioner Sitiveni Ngiliho.
Wow. So we just need to confirm that she will be presiding over today's sentencing. And again, like, when will the proceedings actually begin today?
That is a very good question, Agnes. There have been a lot of rumors rife over the last week or so, and I did spend a good part of last night just, you know, checking up on all of these rumors. People are saying that, you know, she's resigned and things like that, but that's just untrue. We expect court to begin in a little over 3 hours. At 11 o'clock, she is going to preside over the case and sentence the two men.
Nice. If you just joined us here on Pacific Beat, we're speaking to our ABC reporter in Fiji, Lede Movono, ahead of former Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama's possible sentencing today. Are you aware that his political party, have they made any statements about today's sentencing?
Agnes, they haven't. And I did reach out to the Acting General Secretary, Fayaz Koya, who is, of course, a member of parliament. I also reached out to the leader of the opposition, Colonel Inia Serura, too. And they have not made any official statements. We did hear the former General Secretary and former Attorney General, Ayesed Kayum, in the media towards the end of last week, you know, talking about making general statements about the way prosecutions have been conducted on himself and on the party in general, but no real statements as to the sentencing that will take place today and the conviction that was handed down a month ago now.
Lede, today's sentencing is only one of the cases I know involving Mr. Bainimarama, but any other offences, though, has he been charged with that you're aware of?
Yes, Agnes. Frank Bainimarama has also been charged in two other separate unrelated cases, and he faces a count of abuse of office in one of them and two counts in another. So in the second case, he is alleged to have directed the person who was acting police commissioner at the time to terminate basically the contract of two police officers. And that trial is meant to start in just over a month from now, Agnes. And in the last set of charges that he faces, he is alleged to have waived government tender requirements for a company that received over $1 million worth of government contracts for the construction and engineering of our public health infrastructure.
With that many charges against him, I'm wondering whether or not today's sentencing, how do you feel that this will turn out today?
Well, so far, judging from last week's mitigation sentencing hearing, Magistrate Seni Puomau had a exchange with both Defence Counsel Devinesh Sharma and the State Prosecutors Laisani Tambuakuro, and it seemed that she was unsure about what role tariffs are meant to have in a sentencing. So tariffs are basically the minimum time and the minimum amount of time a convicted person should spend in jail before they are eligible for parole or, you know, can apply for release. And so there was a lot of conversation in court around what the starting point for sentencing should be. So both the charge that Frank Bainimarama faces today has a maximum penalty penalty of 5 years imprisonment. So the judge has discretion around what the minimum or the maximum value within that sentence she needs to dish out to Frank Bainimarama today. However, there is what we call legal precedent, you know, whether or not people of a similar personality or profile, rather, as Frank Bainimarama, have ever faced a conviction like this in the past, and what sort of sentence were they given. And also, she's meant to consider what we call aggravating factors. And so the fact that he was, you know, the head of government, a powerful man, included in the kind of things that she might consider as aggravating factors. However, when you're asking for mitigation as a lawyer, you're meant to be presenting, you know, reasons why the court should be sympathetic towards a convicted person. So in the case of Frank Bainimarama, one of the most important things that convicts should do or usually do is, you know, say that they're repentant and express remorse for the crime they have committed. So in the case of Frank Bainimarama, his defense counsels were clear from the get-go that there was no repentance or remorse to be expressed, that they maintain that they were, you know, innocent of the crimes that he has now been convicted. So they removed for themselves, you know, that ability to be looked upon sympathetically. So right now, what some legal gurus have said is registered magistrate Seni Pormau may hand down a suspended sentence, a very light non-custodial sentence that keeps Frank Bainimarama outside of a prison cell. If that happens, we understand that the Director of Public Prosecutions have already begun preparations to appeal that sentence if they see it too light, Agnes.
Thanks for clarifying that up, Lide. As you said, once a powerful man, look, he's no longer a politician, right? But do you think he at least maybe still holds a bit of a sway in terms of politics in Fiji? And if so, do you think today's sentencing will affect Fijians there?
Agnes, I've been thinking about that for the last few weeks and talking about that with some sources through the night, actually, because I think the ordinary Fijian will realize this is a man who ruled over Fiji for all intents and purposes for the better part of two decades. This is a man who was all powerful in this country for longer than anyone else have. You know, no sitting prime minister has had a term as long as he had. And so he held a lot of power in the time that he was in office. And so I just think that it would be, you know, naive for anyone to think that now that he is not a politician, that he no longer holds that power. When he contested the last three general elections, despite that his party lost out in the 2022 one, he still polled so much higher than everyone else. He held such a significant part of the votes that were cast. And so I think he's still quite popular. I think that there were a lot of people who benefited from when he was in power. There's certainly a lot of people who speak of, you know, the poverty alleviation support that his government gave. He was quite popular for having provided educational benefits that still surpass any other government before him. And so this is a man who still wins the hearts of many people. He still draws a crowd when he comes to court. What sort of an impact this will have on his supporters, I'm not so sure. I do know, however, that there are a lot of people that are tired of instability and insecurity, and that's now the prevailing sentiment. People just want for things to be done properly, for the law to take its course, and for the country to get on, as Professor John Frankel said earlier in the show. However, I did speak with police intelligence, I spoke with military sources, and I did speak with people in the government just to find out what the mood is and whether they have, you know, cause for concern, let's put it that way. And every indications are that there's very low to no risk to instability or anything like that. People just want to move on. However, I know there are going to be a lot of sad people. If I can illustrate it, earlier in the week, the Defense Council made a statement saying there are thousands of people praying for the former Fijian Prime Minister to remain out of jail. But at the same time, there are thousands of people praying that he be taken to task for the crimes for which he has been convicted, Agnes.
Well, as I said at the beginning, it is a big day there in Fiji in regards to the sentencing there of former Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama. But we say vinaka alide for talking to us ahead of the sentencing. We will keep tabs with you. But malo.
Vinaka.
That, of course, is our ABC reporter in Fiji, Lide Movono. Pacific leaders are renewing the call for the United Nations to investigate human rights abuses in West Papua. It follows a sickening social media video of Indonesian soldiers torturing a Papuan man online. As Carl Evans reports, there's fears the video is just the tip of the iceberg of how the military is behaving in West Papua.
It was like something from the Dark Ages. A Papuan man sitting in a barrel of water, which slowly turned red as he was punched, kicked, and repeatedly cut with knives by Indonesian soldiers. Port Moresby's governor, Paus Parkop, was one of many horrified by the scene, but he wasn't surprised by it.
This is why we have been calling for the UN Human Rights Commission to do a proper investigation to hold Indonesia to account, because the military in West Papua operates with impunity. Jakarta hardly has any control over them. They do as they please, both in terms of dealing with the people, in terms of business. They've expanded into mining, into logging, into agriculture. You know, they virtually run the place. And so it's not surprised that this type of torture is taking place.
The incident has sparked fresh calls for the United Nations to intervene, after groups like the Pacific Islands Forum and the Melanesian Spearhead Group previously called for the UN's High Commissioner for Human Rights to investigate. Governor Parkop, a longtime supporter of West Papuan independence, says he'll take up the matter with PNG Prime Minister James Marape in the hope of applying further pressure on Indonesia to welcome the inquiry.
Well, I will be raising this matter with him and with the government caucus. I raised it with the ministers in the government now. I know the Prime Minister is very strong on this PIF resolution. He was one of those who pushed for that resolution. So this is why I also want to have this discussion with him, so that when he goes to Jakarta for a state visit, he can raise this serious concern that we have about the human rights situation inside West Papua.
If an investigation fails to eventuate, Governor Parkop fears what the future could hold for West Papua under incoming Prime Minister and former military commander Prabowo Subianto.
Under his watch, so many atrocities were committed in Timor-Leste, in West Papua, in other parts of Indonesia like Aceh. During the transition to democracy in the 90s, so many political activists got disappeared. He's not been proven or found guilty of any of this offense, but it was under his watch. This is a concern that everybody should have within our region.
The commander of Indonesia's military in West Papua offered a rare apology for the incident, but alleged the victim was a member of a West Papuan armed rebel group and had plotted to burn down a health clinic. But Veronica Komen from Amnesty International says the victim was a civilian.
The human rights activists on the ground and I myself have spoken with the family members and then with the local tribal chiefs. They all have stated that these are civilians. In this case, the soldiers, as we know, they took this man and then tortured them. And then because they didn't succeed, then the army handed them over to police, and then police took them to the hospital. So the act of releasing them means that both military and police at that time also admitted that they cannot find anything on them.
Ms. Komen says Amnesty International will campaign on behalf of the victim, while the Indonesian military carries out an investigation into the matter. But there's only so much they can do.
This is the problem always. When it involves soldiers, then cases will go to military court, will be closed from public, and then civil society like us cannot be part of it. Even if, if we do have evidence, we cannot give it to them.
Benny Wender, leader of the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, says a failure to launch a UN investigation will result in more trauma for his people.
Indonesia always reluctant, and there is no evidence, there is no human rights violations. But today, The whole world can see it. Indonesia cannot hide it. So I hope the Indonesia allow it.
And that's Benny Wender, leader of the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, ending that report by Carl Evans. Pacific Beat. Today, the eyes of Tonga turn to the remote island of Vava'u in the country's north, where months of political tension looks set to reach an endpoint. King Tupou VI is set to meet with his advisers, the Privy Council, in a crucial meeting that will likely decide the fate of Prime Minister Seosi Sovaleni and some of his senior ministers. ABC's Tonga reporter Marion Kupu has been closely following the story. Now she joins us live from Vava'u with RSA Malo e Tauma e Pompongini. Appreciate you joining us this morning, Marion. Gosh, what is the atmosphere like ahead of this meeting?
Well, Agnes, Vava'u people have that loyalty and pride, taking it to a different level than the rest of the Tongans here in Tonga. And I think that's why His Majesty chose Vava'u to have this very, very important meeting, which will happen in a few hours' time. The atmosphere here in Vava'u is very calm and quiet. Everybody is awaiting with the results. Though it's not practice for such meeting to send us press releases or whatnot, but everyone here in Vava'u knows that there is a meeting here in the Vava'u, and they're respecting it. And of course, the pride of being Tongan is always on top of the roof, especially when the king is here in Vava'u.
Mm. Yeah, no surprises there with the way that our people would react to this. Marion, now for our listeners who may be just a little bit unaware, can you give us some background on how we got to this point? And the only reason I ask that is because there have been rumours this week that the Prime Minister, Seosi Sovaleni, has already resigned as Defence Minister, as per the wishes of the King, through the Privy Councils, even along with Foreign Minister Fekita Utuikamanu. Has there been proper confirmation of this speculation?
Agnes, for the moment, they are exactly just that, rumours. And neither side have confirmed whether the Prime Minister or the Foreign Minister have resigned. We do note that following the judicial apology by the Prime Minister and the Cabinet Ministers, including the Foreign Minister to His Majesty in Niue, that the Prime Minister was invited to join the next meeting of His Majesty and the Privy Council. Now, that meeting is taking place here in Vava'u today, as mentioned. Now, the Prime Minister does not sit in the Privy Council. That is something that everybody should know and be aware of. The Prime Minister, or any Prime Minister, does not sit in a Privy Council meeting. But this invitation was taken as a positive development that His Majesty was willing to talk things through the Prime Minister as a way forward. Now, it is also important to note that in the traditional Tongan apology, what happens is that one is expected to say sorry, regardless of whether they're right or wrong. And we can say that if the resignation are indeed true, they were made in line with such custom. Now, the decision, therefore, is the king on whether to accept it or not. That will be made clear today in the Privy Council meeting.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. If you just joined us here on Pacific Beat, we're speaking to our ABC reporter in Tonga, specifically Vava'u, Marion Kupu, on this political fate of Prime Minister Seosi Sovaleni. Marion, tell us, who is going to be at the meeting today and what is expected to happen? Because I know some political watchers in Tonga say this whole current political stalemate has put the spotlight squarely back on the constitution and even the extent of the king's power in Tonga. Has there been much discussion in Tonga about this?
Just to be aware, I talked to some of the officials here in Vava'u. The last Privy Council meeting that was held here in Vava'u was in 2010. That's during King George V's fifth time. And this is, mind you, the reform or the transformation or to a more democratic government since 2010. And now this is after 14 years later, then the talk is back here in Mava'u. Now, that's just a significant on itself. Present in the meeting, of course, for the Privy Council meeting are supposedly the seven members of the Privy Councils, which also include Aggie, the husband of the foreign minister, Fekita Utoikamanu. Siosiua Utoikamanu is one of the members of the Privy Council, together with the other members, which also include Lord Raymond Dalgetty. We also have Lord Dangi and two president members, president from the churches here in Tonga. Today, there have been confirmation that only four of the seven members are here in Mava'u, which are the Lord Dalgetty. We have Lord Tangi, a former Minister of Health for Tonga, and we have the President of the Church of Tonga, Reverend Semisi Fonua, and also Dr. Ana Taufeulungaki, former Minister of Education. These four people are here in Tonga. Absent are also Fikita Utoikamanu's husband, together with Brigadier Lord Fialakepa and the President of the Free Western Church, Reverend Dr. Tevita Havea. Now, one of the important things that we should also note is present also is the Lord Privy Seal, William Malolo, who is also the Secretary for Foreign Affairs and the author of the leaked Privy Council decision, which expressed His Majesty's loss of confidence in the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister. The question many are starting to ask now is that the Lord Privy Seal's role is what's the Lord Privy Seal's role in this whole political calamity? Now, someone who is widely known for his aversion of the Foreign Minister. Furthermore, Aggie, is there are eyebrows are being raised today because while he is here in Mava'u at the back of His Majesty, the court in Nuku'alofa will hear today a judicial review that he applied to review the lawfulness of the Public Service Commission appointing of the acting CEO for Foreign Affairs. Now, but perhaps most obviously is the Prime Minister's absence of the council meeting. And as I mentioned before, following the traditional apology, it was understood that he would join today's Privy Council meeting and a positive sign indicating that His Majesty was willing to talk. However, we understand that the Prime Minister was told that he was not needed at today's Privy Council meeting. What many don't realize is that over 2 years since the appointment of Prime Minister Sovaleni, he has been seeking audience with His Majesty and has been declined every single time. The audience in Niue was more than just historic because it has welcomed development and it was a sign of positive strides forward. The Prime Minister is again being denied access to His Majesty today, clearly indicating that has gone back. We are going back to square one with no opportunity to be heard by His Majesty. So yes, there are political watchers are saying the political stalemate has put the spotlight back on the Constitution and the extent of the King's power. While we can expect His Majesty and the Privy Council to deliberate today on the government matters, including his decision over the traditional apology. Now, if there were a resignation, Aggie, and if the King accepts, people will be asking many questions also, but the two most important ones will be, first, who will fill in those ministerial portfolios? Second, to what extent does the King have power over the government? I mean, are we returning Tonga to the pre-2010, where the King has absolute power in appointing his own cabinet ministers? And if so, many will say, this is a very sad day for democracy.
And that is something that we will wait with bated breath. Marion, we really appreciate you joining us this morning. And look, I have to ask, because you are on the land of my family in Vava'u, I have to ask, and I know we've kept you busy with all the work trying to cover this story. And you know, Vava'u was you know, renowned for its beautiful islands and whale watching, which I know it's not even whale watching season yet, but have you managed to explore any of the islands while you've been there following the story?
You know, when you say whale watching, Vava'u is best place to be watching the whales and even swim with the whales, which the whale season are in June, between June and October. But the best time to swim with the whales, it's August, September. So talking to the locals here, Aggie, most of the hotels and the motels have been fully booked since last year. So if you're thinking of coming here to Vava'u, you better hurry up because the accommodations here have been fully booked. We're talking between June and October, but most likely most of the tourists are booking for August, September. And yes, I have driven around the islands here off Vava'u. I love the fact that it's not developed, I would rather say, because the scenery, the natural scenery itself is just beautiful. You know, we have mountains here in Vava'u, not in the main island, but here in Vava'u, it's just so beautiful. The water is so calm. And, you know, there's the slang, you know, there's a word that also describes Vava'u is Fata Fata Ma'afana, which literally means warm heart. And that means, I know you are Vava'u. And Aggie, you know, when you're Ma'afana, when you have that very loyalty and the pride in you, you just go the extra mile with being happy and being proud of being Tonga and Vava'u especially.
Well, all I can say is you probably have one of the nicest backgrounds there for the meeting that you're about to cover this today, Marion. But look, we just want to say Malo Apito. Thank you for covering it. Nice little plug there about the village there. But we'll catch up again.
Thank you very much, Agnes. Ofatu.
Ofatu. That is our ABC reporter in Vava'u, Marion Akupu. Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Let's shift our attention to, of course, our news wrap brought to you by producer Mackenzie Smith. And that I say good morning.
Morning, Aggie.
Hey, look, let's get into it because parts of Suva, they're still struggling to access running water after damage from heavy rain earlier this week.
Yeah, so that weather pattern closed dozens of roads and damaged critical infrastructure, including water pipelines, which Fiji's Water Authority says many parts of Central Division remain without water. Repairs unlikely to be completed until the weekend. A government emergency meeting took place in Suva last night to try and find a solution to this. So far, officials have deployed 50 water tankers to the affected areas. And meanwhile, schools are closed for the second day in a row, and many parts in and around Suva are due to those water supply disruptions.
Nice. And there's new effort in the Pacific to recognise the legal personhood of whales. What's behind this?
Yeah, well, Atmos magazine reports that a landmark ceremony was held yesterday in the Cook Islands in Rarotonga, where the Māori King in New Zealand and Indigenous leaders from across the Pacific signed He Whakaputanga Moana, or Declaration for the Ocean. So the document reportedly recognises whales as legal persons with inherent rights, including the right to freedom of movement, a healthy environment, and the ability to thrive alongside humanity. The agreement was inspired by Te Uriwera Act in New Zealand, which granted a similar legal status to Te Uriwera Forest.
Well, there's definitely a lot happening in the Pacific there. I appreciate you bringing our news wrap this morning, Mackenzie.
No worries.
That is Mackenzie Smith with our news wrap here on Pacific Beat.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
To Samoa, this October will become the first ever Pacific Island country to host the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. The mammoth event will see thousands of representatives from 56 member countries descend on Apia to discuss issues like climate change, democracy and the rule of law. The Commonwealth Secretary, General Patricia Scotland, touched down in Apia this week to see how the preparations are going. She sat down with ABC's Samoa reporter Adele Fruin, telling her she's excited to give Commonwealth countries a real taste to the Pacific.
We are on a real fight on climate change, and this hosting is really important, because it's all very well to say you empathize with the fate of what is happening to small states, but it's very different when you come and you see it with your own eyes and you can hear it from the voices and the stories of the people, and you can taste the pain and the challenge and the resilience, and you can feel what people in the small states feel. And, you know, quite often people will say, well, you have to come to my meeting. And, of course, the Pacific knows that if they have to travel, sometimes it's 2 or 3 days. But when the boot is on the other foot, you'll hear people saying, oh, my goodness, it takes 3 days, to which many people say, welcome to our world. And until you experience it, I think you don't have the sort of respect that the Pacific deserves for always being the ones who travel, always being the ones who make the commitment. And I think the people who come here will realize it is worth the journey.
Now, can you just talk or speak a bit about your, you know, visit in Samoa? What will you be, you know, doing while you're staying here?
Well, the most important thing we're going to do is to visit all the venues. We are preparing for this CHOGM. We want the leaders to have a fantastic time. We want to enhance their opportunities to understand each other and difficulties that we have across our Commonwealth. If you think about it, our Commonwealth represents 1/3 of the world. We have the 5 regions. We have big countries, small countries, landlocked countries, island states, rich countries, poor countries, all of them. This eclectic mix of countries are able to talk about and share the problems and the solutions that we need to have a vibrant world, meeting our sustainable development goals, meeting the climate agenda set out for us in Paris in COP21, but also trying to make sure that the world owns up and delivers the promises that has been made in relation to climate change. You know, way back in 2009, the world said that we're going to fund the climate-strapped countries with $100 million a year. That still hasn't been met. We now have a loss and damage fund, which has about $700 million committed to it now. But we know that if we're really going to address these issues, we need more than $4 trillion. So we celebrate whatever we have, but there's so much more to do. And we're talking about how do we do that? How do we do that practically?
What's going to be the agenda for the Commonwealth meeting?
Well, one of the top areas of focus is, of course, going to be climate change. The sea level rise has risen dangerously high. We're now, last year, we were at, what, 1.49 degrees. And we saw the devastation that that caused. So many of our loved ones died as a result of that tragic explosion of activities. Look at what happened to poor Vanuatu. I mean, you could just list the number of countries who have been battered. Tonga's tragedy in terms of the underwater volcano. No one had ever thought that there would be an underwater volcano. And so many families were devastated. So many homes were lost. So many people lost their loved ones. And what we're seeing is these tragic climatic incidents are happening more and more frequently and more tragically. So climate change is going to be a huge part.
That's ABC's reporter in Samoa, Adele Fruant, with that report.
Disasters are inevitable, but losing your life or home isn't. Learn what to do before, during, and after disaster in a program aimed at helping you keep safe. Pacific Prepared is all things disaster preparedness for the Pacific, with a team of reporters on the ground, having conversations, and bringing you the stories that could help you, your family, and community prepare for natural disasters. Pacific Prepared, Fridays from 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
It really does bring us to the end of Pacific Beat now. Time to take a look back at one of our main stories today. All eyes on the Suva Magistrates Court, where the former Prime Minister, Frank Bainimarama, has been sentenced this morning for perverting the course of justice. Our report in Fiji, Lidi Mavono, was there.
So right now, what some legal gurus have said is Register Magistrate Seni Pumau may hand down a suspended sentence, a very light, non-custodial sentence that keeps Frank Bainimarama outside of a prison cell.
That's our reporter, Lidi Mavono in Fiji. Remember, these stories will go up online. You simply have to type Pacific Beat Radio Australia into your search engine for you to replay or share these stories across your social media platforms. It is Easter weekend, so we will be off air tomorrow, but you can hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. Stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia, though, because news is next. And then coming up after that, it's Nija Daily. Until then, have a safe and amazing Easter weekend. O toa awhātou, I'm Aggie Tupou, and this is Pacific Beat.